Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's a Tuesday. It's April 16th, 2024. Hope you're doing well, and thank you for tuning in to EWTN. Coming up on the program today, a few weeks ago in the Register, I want to thank my friend, Dr. Pia Desleny, of course, a wonderful theologian and speaker in her own right. She sent me this piece by Father Ray Atwood that was published in the Register in March in the National Catholic Register. We will put the link on our archive section at AveMariaRadio.net. You just go to the archives and then you click on the Catholic Connection section, and all the stories we discuss, the segments, Andrew usually has everything up by midday, so it's really easy to grab if you want to go back and read about the story to which we're referencing or re-listen to the interviews. Very easy to do. But it was quite a thought-provoking piece, I have to say. I never thought about this before. So the whole argument of Father Ray, he was thinking about all of this in Humana Vitae when the whole big IVF story broke a few weeks ago, remember, in the state of Alabama, obviously, which is the home of EWTN. And he was talking now in this blog, and again, it's really interesting, talking about the timing of the release of Humana Vitae. And had it been released earlier, a few years earlier, would things be different in terms of the way Catholics, people who identify as Catholics, but may or may not be that familiar with church teaching, and even if they are, don't practice it, don't embrace it, don't believe it? He takes a look back. And why is it important now to look back at the timing of the release of Humana Vitae? So we'll discuss with Father Ray. He's actually from the Diocese of Dubuque, Iowa. And he also was educated in Columbus, Ohio, and he was ordained in 1994, I believe. And then we're going to wrap up with attorney Daniel Bloomberg, who is working very closely with nuns and others who are leading the charge in New York against this awful abortion mandate. There's actually a diverse coalition of religious groups that will be at the New York Court of Appeals to continue their fight against the state's abortion mandate. And so there's all kinds of people that are joining in on this fight, thanks be to God. There's a group of Anglican and Catholic nuns, representatives from Catholic dioceses, Christian churches, faith-based social ministers. So they're getting very involved in this because they're standing up for themselves because they don't want to have to cover abortions in their employee health insurance plans because it's a violation, definitely, of their religious beliefs. So that is the show for today. And I do hope you can stay tuned for the entire hour. Weather-wise, we still have some pretty rough weather out there. The National Weather Service is saying there is an enhanced risk, a level 3 of 5, for severe thunderstorms today, with threats for significant severe hail and tornado potential over southern Iowa into northern Missouri, as well as west central Illinois. Elevated to critical fire weather is possible today due to gusty winds and dry conditions over parts of the southern high plains and northeastern Montana. So just giving you a weather update so you can make your plans and keep that in mind, especially if you're traveling anywhere today. Right now, it's 3 minutes past the hour. Again, we are so happy to have you listening to EWTN. This program, of course, is co-produced by EWTN. EWTN.com, and also Ave Maria Radio, AveMariaRadio.net. A ton of news to get through, a busy morning, never a dull moment. Let's get started. The United States Supreme Court awarding Idaho emergency relief that will allow the state to enforce its ban on doctors performing sex change operations on children and providing them with sex change drugs. In a 6-3 decision on Monday, the Supreme Court ruling the lower appellate court had gone too far when it blocked Idaho from enforcing the law altogether. That decision, however, does not settle the question of whether that law is constitutional. The lower court blocking the state from enforcing any part of the law in response to a lawsuit that challenged the constitutionality of the rules. The lawsuit is still ongoing, but the order had been preventing the law from going into effect while both sides litigated the constitutionality of that measure in court. Meanwhile, the Idaho Attorney General Raul Labrador, a Republican, praising the Supreme Court's decision in a statement yesterday, saying he's witnessed firsthand the devastating consequences of drugs and procedures used on children with gender dysphoria, and it's a preventable tragedy. He said the state does have a duty to protect and support all children, and that's why he's proud to defend Idaho's law that ensures children are not subjected to life-altering drugs and procedures. Well, the U.S. says it's committed to Israel's defense. Secretary of State Antony Blinken telling reporters yesterday Israel was able to shoot down a barrage of missiles and drones launched over the weekend by Iran with the help of the U.S.
I think what this weekend demonstrated is that Israel did not have to and does not have to defend itself alone when it is the victim of an aggression, the victim of an attack.
He added he's working with partners in the region to prevent escalation of the current conflict. Israel is weighing its next steps after Iran's attack over the weekend. Anti-Israel protests erupting, meanwhile, on interstates, roads, and bridges in cities across the U.S. Retired Air Force Lieutenant General David DeTulla thinks there's something underneath the surface of these events.
They certainly are an example of information warfare on the part of terrorists and those who support Iran.
They've converged on New York's Brooklyn Bridge and are clashing with police. Meanwhile, on the West Coast, they completely, as we mentioned, blocked southbound traffic on the Golden Gate Bridge. The protesters were also on Wall Street in Manhattan, the port of Long Beach, California, and elsewhere around the country yesterday. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell is slamming President Biden's approach to Iran. While speaking on the Senate floor, McConnell said Iran has been embroiled or emboldened under the Biden administration, citing Tehran's recent attack on Israel.
The second thing we saw was a commander-in-chief sticking to the same playbook, second-guessing the will of the Israeli people and trying to tie the hands of an ally under attack.
He called for meaningful costs to be imposed on Iran in retaliation for the attack. Iran launching again hundreds of drones and missiles at Israel over the weekend, most of which, as you heard, were intercepted with the help of the U.S. As University of Southern California's class of 2024 prepares to graduate next month, when some 65,000 people are expected to gather at the LA campus for the May 10th commencement ceremony, the school has now sparked some controversy over its cancellation yesterday of the undergraduate valedictorian's planned speech amid concerns about her pro-Palestinian activism. It's just the latest flashpoint in tensions that have been simmering for months and have spurred debate about limits on free speech across colleges in the U.S. since the outbreak of the war in Gaza. The university maintains they are not canceling the speech due to her comments, but rather because of the unprecedented risks of harassment and violence that could break out. House Speaker Mike Johnson unveiling a plan for foreign aid, calling for four separate bills with funding for Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, and other priorities. He says the world is watching to see how the U.S. will react to these international conflicts.
We have terrorists and tyrants and terrible leaders around the world like Putin and Xi and in Iran, and they're watching to see if America will stand up for its allies and in our own interest around the globe, and we will.
Johnson explaining his plan after a closed-door GOP conference meeting yesterday after months of delay. Each bill would be voted on separately before the end of the week. Johnson saying some conservatives are opposed to funding Ukraine in its offense against the Russian invasion, and others are calling for more money for the southern border before approving foreign aid. The package would differ from a $95 billion plan approved by the Senate in February. It leaves the future of the bills up in the air if they pass. Two bodies found Sunday in rural Texas County, Oklahoma, are now believed to be those of two Kansas women who disappeared more than 2 weeks ago.
This case did not end the way we had hoped. It has certainly been a tragedy for everybody involved.
That's Director Angela Spurlock with the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation, who says 27-year-old Veronica Butler and 39-year-old Jillian Kelly of Kansas vanishing on their way to Eva, Oklahoma, to pick up Butler's two children who were reportedly living with their paternal grandmother. The women's vehicle was found abandoned near Elkhart, Kansas. Four suspects were arrested on Saturday in Texas and Cimarron counties. Tad Cullum, Tiffany Adams, Cole Twombly, and Cora Twombly all booked into the Texas County Jail on complaints of kidnapping and first-degree murder. The OSBI is calling it an ongoing investigation. And the House is expected to send articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas to the Senate today. That move will force a Democratic-led Senate to take up the matter of impeachment against Mayorkas. Republicans in the House impeaching Mayorkas in February over his handling of the U.S.-Mexico border. Mayorkas accused of willful and systematic refusal to comply with the law. Meanwhile, Jack Cronin tells us officials in San Diego's North County say migrants are being dropped off in boats miles from the harbor.
San Diego County Supervisor Jim Desmond and Carlsbad Mayor Keith Blackburn say a boat landed on the beach in Carlsbad Saturday, dropping off migrants who were immediately picked up by drivers in SUVs. They're calling on federal authorities and state officials, like those at Carlsbad State Beach, to take immediate action to secure the border as well as other areas that are being hit by smuggling efforts. Supervisor Desmond says in addition to the 125,000 migrants dropped off in San Diego County by Border Patrol since September, the San Diego section of the border had 7,000 encounters last week, the highest number in the country.
And Tammy Trujillo tells us Boeing holding a presentation yesterday outlining quality and safety testing on its 787 Dreamliner and 777 aircrafts.
This comes after months of scrutiny and a week after a new engineer claimed the plane company is taking shortcuts to speed up production. The presentation outlined the company's stress and safety tests for the 787. The engineer, along with another whistleblower and an independent safety expert, will speak to the Senate on Wednesday about Boeing. The company's quarterly reports will be released on April 24th.
The head of the FBI says when it comes to stopping the flow of drugs from Mexico into Texas, they are getting some help from the Mexican government, but he'd like a whole lot more.
We need their help cracking down on the cartels harder. We need help rooting out labs where the poison is being produced.
FBI Director Chris Wray telling Congress they also need help stopping the flow of chemicals that are coming into Mexico from China. That will be harder, he admits. The Chinese Communist Party or Communist Party has been more than willing to work with the cartels. And there's a Republican effort, as Christian Mark tells us, to keep a disgraced former Congressman George Santos out of the U.S. Capitol building.
Despite being expelled from Congress, Santos shocked many by attending last month's State of the Union address because former members retain House privileges. New York Representative Anthony Desposito has put forward a resolution to modify House rules so that ousted members are banned from the House floor, as well as other areas like the members-only gym and dining room. Santos would also have to give up his member pin, which allows him to easily enter the Capitol. A vote on the resolution may not happen, though, because many Republicans were against expelling Santos in the first place.
Numbers released by the Bureau of Labor Statistics this week showing inflation is running at 3.5%, but in some cities, the number is actually much higher. WalletHub compared 23 major metropolitan areas to determine how inflation is impacting different parts of the nation. The cities with the biggest inflation problem include Honolulu, Miami, Riverside, California, St. Louis, Seattle, and Dallas. Those cities are all experiencing year-over-year inflation above 4%. While New York City, Denver, Minneapolis, Phoenix, Detroit, and the Anchorage area are dealing with smaller inflation numbers, all below 3%. WalletHub compared CPI numbers to the latest month, to 2 months prior and 1 year prior, to get a glimpse of how inflation has changed in the short and long terms. And on a busy Tuesday morning, finally in our news segment, there are only 14 states in the U.S., as Aaron Rial tells us, where you can afford to buy a home if you have $75,000.
That's down from 36 states just 4 years ago. Mississippi, Ohio, Arkansas, Indiana, Kentucky, Iowa, Oklahoma, Michigan, Missouri, Louisiana, Alabama, Kansas, North Dakota, and West Virginia. That is where median home prices are $300,000 or less compared with U.S. median prices of $402,000. Bankrate looked at annual income needed to cover home ownership costs without spending more than 28% on housing.
It is a Tuesday morning, so appreciate your listenership here on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Don't forget, we have so many great news outlets, including Catholic News Agency, of course, Raymond's show World Over with Raymond Arroyo. We have EWTN News In Depth. We have Pro Life Weekly. We have EWTN News Nightly. And, of course, we have the wonderful National Catholic Register, ncregister.com. But all these links are on EWTN.com. And speaking of the Register, there was a very interesting article, put on your thinking caps, because we always want you to think deeply about the faith, that was written by a priest thinking, speaking of thinking, about the timing of the release of Humana Vitae. We will discuss coming up next. And it was actually posted on the Register. And let me give you the date here. But again, we'll have the link on our archive section. Written by our guest in a few minutes, Father Ray Atwood. And it was posted March 6th on the Register. But we'll put the link up there for you so you don't have to do too much work to find it. We will be right back. It's a Tuesday. You're listening to EWTN. Stay tuned.
At EWTN Radio, your family. And because you're a part of our family, we value your opinions on what you hear on EWTN. You can call our listener comment line 24/7 at 205-795-5773. We value your comments, your questions, and any suggestions you may have to make EWTN Radio even better. 205-795-5773. And thank you for listening to EWTN Radio.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically own shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Do you have a teenager at home who's full of potential? Too often the world is telling you to be content with mediocrity instead of raising respectful and responsible young adults with strong character. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. If you need some help, not only to navigate those teen years, but to really enjoy them, check out my book, Standing Strong, Good Discipline Makes Great Teens, as well as my other books, on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Just a reminder, in addition to all the content I mentioned prior to the break and all the great outlets we have, news outlets, we also have amazing podcasts that we put out there for you to really enjoy, including Encouragement Conquers All. It's another great podcast at EWTN's Podcast Central. Justin Fatica interviews experts in encouragement from all walks of life, mentors and leaders in athletics, business, parenting, and more, to share how they give and receive encouragement. So check it out, the Podcast Central today through EWTN. As I mentioned, I really appreciate Dr. Pia Desleny sending me along this article. It really made me think a lot about the timing of the release of Humanity Vitae. The article, Christ Taught Us as Having One Authority and So Must His Church, is written by Father Ray Atwood, who's from Dubuque, Iowa, the Archdiocese there. Father, this is, I think, really compelling for me. I was telling you during the break that Humana Vitae had a huge impact on my reversion to the Catholic faith. Now, you wrote this as the whole story with Alabama Supreme Court and IVF was breaking. What prompted you to write this and kind of reflect on the timing of the release of Humana Vitae? Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here. I have thought about this subject ever since I read the encyclical for the first time in the 80s. And the first time I read it, it did not seem to be particularly compelling to me. It made some very good points, and I want to emphasize that I completely agree with the teaching on Humani Vitae. But it just seemed to me to be, it didn't seem that clear. And then later on, when I was in, after I was ordained, I read Evangelium Vitae, and that made quite a compelling argument for life, Pope St. John Paul II's encyclical on human life. And so in contrast to Humani Vitae, that really was very compelling. But the IVF thing account got me thinking about this topic again, and I've reflected on it at some length, and this is an opportunity for me to share with a wider audience my thoughts and insights on the encyclical. And it's too bad, because what I point out is that Pope St. Paul VI had a historical precedent 30 years earlier with Costikinubi, and how the issue of contraception came up, a different question, but a different pope handled it differently, and the result, the reaction was far different than what happened with Paul VI. So, as I point out, how we do something can be as important as what we do.
So one of your points in the article, and again, folks, will put the link for you from the Register article by Father, is that the controversy, you say, over Humana Vitae was partly caused by the delay in presenting the teaching when new questions surrounded birth control arose. So take us back to the timing, Father, if you would, and why you think this is a problem, or was a problem,
well,
and still is.
That is a key. I noticed when I read Costi Canubi that it was issued 4 months after the Anglican decision on birth control, allowing mm-hmm. birth control, which is on the assumption August 15th, 1930. Now, the Pope probably had advance notice that this is coming regardless, though. By the end of the year, the Pope had come out with a definitive, strong, deeply well-reasoned argument reaffirming the Church's position, and it was widely accepted. However, the pill, which I've seen evidence indicating that it may have been used as early as the 1950s. I know that the FDA approved it in 1960, but by 1960, for sure, it had been approved in this country and started to be used. Pope St. John the 23rd and Paul the 6th, instead of issuing a definitive ruling on it, like their predecessor, delayed. They gave it. They talked about it at the council. They approved. Paul the 6th formed the birth control commission, and years went by before the Church issued a definitive ruling on the pill, which was the development in the 1960s. So, in contrast to Pius the 11th, Pope John the 23rd and Paul the 6th delayed, and there's reasons for that, but the consequence of it was that the delay indicated to people that a change was coming, and further delay indicated to people that, you know, strengthened that belief. And when the change didn't happen, that's why there was such a negative reaction. And that, when I first read it, I thought, well, why this negative reaction? They were only reaffirming what the Church did. But they were, by not speaking quickly enough, like within a few months of the 1960 development, I think that led the expectations of change, which were dashed, and that produced the anger, which was not present in 1930. So it's, you know, from 1960 to 68, that's 8 years. That is a long time. And I've imagined what would have happened had Pope St. John the 23rd, in December of 1960, issued an encyclical on this question. I think that the reaction would have been much more acceptance, and then Paul the 6th, you know, would have just reaffirmed it. There would not have been the dissent and the anger that was caused in 1968. So 4 months versus 8 years is a big difference. And it, to me, it explains the reaction.
What about the fact, though, and this is me, the media person, talking, and I've done a lot of research on this in terms of, I was telling you during the break how important Humana Vitae was to my reversion to the faith. The culture was already going in that direction, though, and there was a big, big push in the culture. All these things were exploding, you know, I call it the perfect cultural storm that was happening in that time of the world in the 1960s. Everything was happening in terms of the media exploding and in terms of the Vietnam conflict and questioning authority everywhere. So you think that that delay, if it had come out earlier, would have made that much of a difference versus would it survived even then, the push of the culture, though, given the way things were going?
It would have. And I believe that because the teaching is solid and it's unchangeable. And by opening up the question and not answering it, I think we fed into the progressive idea that this teaching can change. It would have still been opposed, but you would not have had the expectation that it would change. That was created by the silence, by the study, and by the delay in implementing the encyclical. Because by 1968, people were still expecting the Church to rule on this. So certainly there would have been resistance and there would have been opposition to the issue. But what the delay caused was an expectation of change. And that factor would not have been not have been there had both Pope, one or either Pope, spoken quite definitively earlier on.
So why look back then? What is your main point and hope for people in looking back at history right now?
What we need to do is to understand not only what we teach, but how it is presented and how we respond to new developments, new questions on these old issues, old principles like birth control is one of them. How we respond, the way we respond, is significant. And I think that's what that teaches us. I think it teaches us the importance of timeliness. John Paul II's Evangelii Vitae came only a few months after, 4 or 5 months after the Cairo conference in September of 1994, which that was a response to. So I think it is important to look at how we're presenting something and to be reflective, yes, and careful, but at the same time to be conscious of the fact that excessive delay can have consequences.
More with Father Ray Atwood when we come back. He's from the Archdiocese of Dubuque, Iowa. Very thought-provoking piece he posted in March on the Register. We'll be right back.
'60 on 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The Eighth Commandment. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. At one level, the reputation a person has is one of their most precious gifts, and to intentionally harm the good reputation of someone is a very grave matter. We can do this often through detraction, by disclosing others' faults without a valid reason, or calumny, just outright lying about other people, likewise through rash judgment. This commandment also protects the truth, which is another very, very great good. To lie is to speak something that we know is false with the intention of deceiving others. We ought to be dedicated to the truth. It is the truth that sets people free, while errors and lies entrap people in many difficult and often sinful situations. The Lord asks us to give witness to the truth of the gospel. This commandment therefore asks us to stay dedicated to the truth and to other people's reputation. The Eighth Commandment, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor.
For more about the Ten Commandments, visit EWTNRC.com.
Who is responsible for the death of Jesus? The Catholic Catechism emphatically states that neither the Jews of Jesus' time nor the Jews of our time should be considered rejected or accursed as a consequence of the Lord's Passion. Not all the Jews in the religious hierarchy were opposed to him. Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea were two prominent men who were secret disciples. The Acts of the Apostles notes that many priests were obedient to the faith, and some belonged to the party of the Pharisees. St. James reported to St. Paul that many thousands believed in the Lord and were also zealous for the law. The religious authorities were not in unanimity as to what to do with Jesus. The Pharisees threatened excommunication to his followers. The Sanhedrin, having declared him a blasphemer, but without power to execute, turned him over to the Romans as a political anarchist. The Catechism cautions we must leave judgment as to the participants in Jesus' trial to God alone. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Father Ray Atwood is with us and posted a very good, well-written piece on the National Catholic Register website, and it was actually posted on, let me give you the date again, posted about a month ago, a little bit more than a month ago, but very timely, of course, with all the discussions going on. Especially, so, Father, let me ask you, we're talking about Humana Vitae. We just had the Infinite Dignity document released a week ago yesterday. Your thoughts on that? If you look at, you know, the timing of it, and since we're talking about timing, we're talking about reaction, what do you think?
I think it is a wonderful document. I'm very impressed with it. I did not think in terms of human trafficking about dignity that I wasn't really sure what areas would be covered. But in the end, it covers areas like abortion, human trafficking, surrogacy. I think it is a well-reasoned document. It says in there that it took about 5 years to draft, and there were redrafts of it. I think human dignity is an extremely important concept when it comes to the issue of birth control, abortion, human slavery, surrogacy, and all these other issues. And I'm glad that it is out. I think it's going to make an important contribution to the Church's message on the gospel of life. So I really thought it was quite powerful. In fact, I'm going to use some of it in a in a homily coming up in the next couple of weeks, giving some examples from it on the, for the theme I'm using. So I appreciate what the Holy Father says about it. And he also goes about different types of dignity, you know, social dignity and moral dignity. And I didn't realize there were different kinds. So that was new teaching. I'm always looking for something new. What can I learn that I didn't know before? And that's something in there that helped me.
It's interesting if you saw some of the reaction. At first, I don't think the press knew what to do with it because they treat, you know, Pope Francis as the Pope of the Church of What's Happening Now, like the old Flip Wilson series that used to be on, or comedy used to be on,
yeah.
Right? Oh, we love him because he's, you know, he changes his mind. And that's what they think anyway. But they were really, they're starting to come out with a lot of stories written by people with gender dysphoria, who a man identified as a woman had this terrible, terrible editorial about how the Pope says I don't have any dignity, totally misrepresenting. It's just the opposite. The reason they released the document is because they believe you have dignity and they want to help you understand who you are, made in the image and likeness of God. But there's been a lot of pushback with that. I mean, the culture is not accepting and hasn't accepted what the Church has taught for years.
That's true, and that's a typical play in the approach in the culture. Misrepresent something and then criticize the misrepresentation.
Right, right. But
well, I think that's always going to be the case. Mm-hmm. It was the case with our Lord. I mean, with the Pharisees and Sadducees and the other things he taught. Today's reading from St. Stephen, you know, Stephen,
yep,
looking up to heaven and, yep, identifying the Son of God caused him to be stoned. So it's interesting that it comes out. I mean, it's a new iteration of an old idea, and that is Christ and his Church stand for truth. The world stands against it, and we're in conflict. And so it doesn't really surprise me.
When are people, more Catholics, going to start reading some of these documents? That's been one of my big things in trying to get people to actually pick up these documents and read them, considering if you go back to the 1960s when the average layperson wouldn't have access to the way we have access to these encyclicals and everything now. I really wish more people would read and see what the Church has to say, because it's very, very powerful when the Church speaks on these issues.
Teresa, you're right. And the good thing about today, one of the nice things about technology, is that we have access to mountains of information we never had access to. We don't have to write to get a physical copy of the encyclical in a couple of weeks. I mean, we can get it instantly. I think they will read more of it as it is pointed out to them, as we let people, you know, give people links like you're doing with your show. I think we have to point people to these sources of information in order to get them to delve into this part of the tradition. I've got a small group that I've in one of my parishes, and we're looking at a guy named Matt Spez on the role and dignity of women in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a mom's group, where Moms Defending the Faith, we call it. And we're exploring Vatican II's document on the family, just that section. And so I think we have to form groups. We have to, in any way possible, homilies are a good one, study groups, shows like yours, point people to these sources and encourage them to dig into it and read what they can so they can drink from the wellspring of the Church's tradition, which is
right.
So rich.
It is, and that's the thing that just opened my mind and my heart when I started actually reading the documents. What a concept, and reading what the catechism and what the Church actually taught versus, you know, what I had forgotten all those many years that I was away from the faith. We're talking with Father Ray Atwood. He's a priest in the Archdiocese of Dubuque, Iowa. He serves at two parishes, Sacred Heart Parish and also Conception Parish. And he wrote a very, very thought-provoking piece that we're going to be posting the link for you on my website and also on the Catholic Connection archives as well. So, Father, in addition to all the very good things that you just mentioned, what else can we do to help Catholics embrace the truth of the Church? Because we still see so much confusion, people not reading even beyond. When I was in journalism school, they told us most people don't read beyond the lead paragraph. Now they don't read beyond the headline or the tweet, you know, or the post, whatever it is. Very, very short. And there's information overload, but it's so important just to sit down, read scripture, reflect, and see what the Church has to say on these issues versus what the post on X or something else is telling you the Church says.
That's true. Right now, Teresa, I'm working on a full-length biography of Venerable Fulton Sheen.
Oh.
Because I'm in journalism myself, And so when COVID hit, I had a lot of time to read, and I started reading his works. And the breadth and depth of his works is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I read everything he's written, which is considerable. And I'm collecting material, and I've been writing a book for the last, researching for the last 4 years. It's still a long way in the making. In fact, I'm going to Washington, D.C. next week to do some more research at Catholic University. But pointing to people like him who made the faith accessible, he was able to communicate these timeless truths in a profound and accessible way. So I think pointing to, and a lot of his works are not that long, pointing them to sources that they can absorb, and then challenging people to grow by sitting down and reading, getting offline, sitting down and reading some of this stuff to enrich their lives. If we show them how this will make your life better, richer, fuller, I think we will contribute to a better world, a holier world. So we point to the truth and, you know, share a book, share an encyclical, share information with other people, and hopefully get them to take a look themselves and be drawn by the truth. The truth is attractive.
Yes,
the truth
it is.
It's something we want.
Yep.
And, yeah, I was in journalism school in the 80s, and you know how much has changed since then.
Don't get me started. I do. I have a whole book written about that called Noise. But, yeah, I graduated in 81 with my journalism degree, and it has changed so much. Father, thank you. Speaking of great sources, how do we get your books, The Master of Preaching and Precious in the Eyes of the Lord?
You can get my, well, right now they're not reprinting Precious in the Eyes of the Lord. I've got a couple copies here myself, but I've had some difficulties getting that out. But the Master Preaching are available on Amazon.
Okay.
And you can pick those out.
Great. We will put that there as well. Again, our guest has been Father Ray Atwood. Father, thanks so much for that very, very thought-provoking discussion and the blog as well. We'll be right back on a Tuesday morning edition of Catholic Connection. Stay tuned.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
Does your family make regular time to work, play, talk, and pray together every day? Research shows that when Catholic families create strong, consistent daily rituals for working, playing, talking, and praying together, they set the stage for teaching their kids Christian attitudes toward work, leisure, relationships, and faith. If it's true that values are more caught than taught, family rituals are what makes a Christian worldview truly contagious. That's why the rite of family rituals is such an important part of the liturgy of domestic church life. It helps families come together as strong domestic churches and learn what it means to be intentional disciples at home and in the world. To discover more ways your family can celebrate the liturgy of domestic church life, check out the newest editions of Parenting with Grace and visit CatholicCounselors.com. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
I tell oftentimes an experience that I had at Divine Child when I was a young priest, 1 year ordained. First time I ever really saw the power of the Blessed Sacrament. And we simply exposed the Blessed Sacrament at the end of Mass one night. I encouraged people. I said, you know what? We've been in the habit of praying over people after Mass. I said, we're not going to do that this week. I'm just going to invite people to come on up and pray if they want to pray. And I put the Blessed Sacrament on the altar. I kneeled down. As I kneeled down, the church is in the sanctuary. The whole church. And as I'm looking at this, and I'm looking at the people there, and I'm looking at Jesus under the appearance of bread there, I saw the Lord standing on the altar, and he's just standing there looking out at all the people. And then at a certain point, he turned towards me, and he just bowed, and he says, "Don't you see how easy this is? You don't have to do anything. You just have to put me out. You put me out, and I will work."
Heating up in New York, and to talk about that with us, Attorney Daniel Blomberg from the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty. A diverse coalition of religious groups are taking on New York State at the Court of Appeals to continue their fight against the state's abortion mandate. So, Daniel, thanks for joining us again. This is a really important case, and you've got some interesting groups coming together, including nuns, both Anglican and Catholic, Catholic dioceses, Christian churches, faith-based social ministries. So bring us up to date in terms of where this case is right now, and thank you for joining us.
Yeah, it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you. So, I mean, really, honestly, this is like the Little Sisters of the Poor case all over again and worse.
Wow.
Right? Little Sisters of the Poor is the same idea where you had a group of sincere people that just want to serve their communities. They've been doing this for a long time. I mean, and then the government comes along and it says, hey, we're going to take over your health care and we're going to make you provide, in this case, abortions to your employees. And this, you know, then as now, the sisters aren't saying people can't do what they want to do. They're just saying, please leave us out of it, right? They're just, don't make us participate in something that violates our faith. And so here, instead of, we have the Sisters of St. Mary, who are the oldest order of Catholic, of Anglican nuns in the United States. They've been doing this for a very long time. They take care of things like cashmere goats, right? You know, they're not public enemy number one, and they just want to be able to run their ministry like they always have, which is not providing abortions to their employees. You know, the state wants to do it. The state can do what it wants. They can't do anything about that, but they can't personally participate in something they believe is wrong. And that's same with the Carmelite sisters here, a Catholic order of nuns that also doesn't want to have to participate in New York's provision of abortion to employees. And like you said, there's a diverse coalition here. We've got Baptists, we've got Lutherans, we've got Catholics, we've got Anglicans, all coming together and just saying, please leave me alone, right? You know, just let, you know, don't take over my ministry to run your abortion health care.
So where does it stand right now in terms of court activity?
So this is before the highest court in the state of New York. In most states, we call that the Supreme Court. In the state of New York, that's called the Court of Appeals. And this is worked its way all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court several years ago. The U.S. Supreme Court granted the case and sent it back down to be reevaluated in light of a very significant decision on behalf of Catholic foster care services in Philadelphia called Fulton. The Fulton case, the Supreme Court said, was something that New York needed to think about before it tried to impose this on all the Lutherans and Catholics and Anglicans and Baptists again. And so they sent it back down. It's worked its way through the courts. The courts have continued to say, too bad, so sad. You know, Fulton doesn't change our minds. We're still going to make you, sisters have been doing your ministry for hundreds of years. We're going to make you participate in providing abortion. And now the New York Supreme Court is going to have to decide what they're going to do. We've got the argument today
to
address exactly this issue.
So this is very, very, really timely. We appreciate this. It's so amazing to me because, and maybe I'm reading too much into this, but this is a reporter in me. It seems as if, I'm just throwing this out there, that even if they can't get them to provide and cover abortions, right, then the more they can tie them up, the more they can limit their ministry, the more they can keep them from doing what they're supposed to do. It's like they want to cripple these people with whom they disagree on abortion.
Well, and that's the whole problem, right? The whole problem is that we live in a diverse and pluralistic society. People disagree on things like religion, and they disagree on things like abortion. But whatever we disagree on, we should agree that we're not going to force someone to violate their conscience in a 100, you know, almost 200-year-old ministry and do exactly the thing that they've never done before and they really believe God doesn't want them to do. I mean, we don't need to do that in a country like ours, in a big, strong state like New York. They can do lots of things in New York. They don't need to force Anglican and Catholic nuns to help them with providing abortion.
So then why bother? Why is the state doing this? And why do other states try to do this as well, do you think?
Well, you know, at first the state wasn't going to do this. That's one of the remarkable things about it. New York looked at it and you're like, you know what? This is crazy. We don't need to do it. We're gonna treat you with respect, and we're going to treat you like other religious objectors, and we're gonna not force you to do this, right? In the state of New York, certain types of churches they don't have to provide abortion, and the state has written an exemption into their code that says if you are primarily geared toward teaching the faith and serving members of your own faith, then we're not going to force you to provide abortion. But if you're like the Carmelites that go out and serve the community and they run a nursing home for people of all faiths, not just their own faith, well, then you're stuck, right? And that's insane. It's insane that the state of New York would rather have the Carmelites throw people out in the street who aren't Catholic than just, you know, finding another way to provide abortion. But B, it shows that the state can accommodate people if it wants to. And in fact, it was going to accommodate everybody with the same religious objection until abortion activists got involved. And the abortion activists weren't looking to live and let live. They weren't looking to allow a reasonable accommodation like we have across the nation, like frankly, the Biden administration just said was appropriate for groups like the Little Sisters of the Poor. No, that wasn't good enough. They had to force the Carmelites, they had to force the Sisters of St. Mary to participate in the abortion plan. That doesn't make any sense. It's unreasonable. It's unfair. And hopefully it'll be stopped here soon.
So are you optimistic?
I am optimistic. I think that we will get to a result in this case eventually where sanity is going to prevail and we're going to allow people to run their ministries in the right way. Now, will that happen at the New York Court of Appeals? That's a very different question. I hope so. I hope so.
But how much of a hit is this? I know that the work is pro bono, but the thing is how this still psychologically, energy-wise, time-wise, takes a lot out of you. Going to court for anything, even a traffic ticket for crying out loud, you're an experienced attorney, you know that. And so I think part of it is psychological warfare, to wear them down. And you see this over and over and over again with so many different groups. I mean, the Little Sisters of the Poor, forever in court, that has to have an impact on these ministries.
Oh, you're absolutely right about that. The process is the punishment. The goal is to use governmental coercion and governmental investigations and all of this kind of stuff to pressure people into grinding them down, right? One of the things that's really interesting, right, is there's a recognition that in our society, the First Amendment carves out space for people to live according to their beliefs without the government coming in and crushing them. But the government, instead of crushing them, can pressure them over and over and over again, long term, and wear them down, like you're saying. And so we actually have several cases that are dealing with exactly that problem, with the government trying to use its coercive investigative power to pressure religious groups into giving up. And it's a real problem. It's a real problem. We got a case out in the Ninth Circuit right now. It's dealing with exactly that kind of problem. I just filed a brief in a case in the Seventh Circuit over in Illinois, dealing with exactly that problem yesterday. So it's a real problem. And one of the reasons why we need folks to stand up and to be courageous, because freedom doesn't defend itself, right? You have to have people who are courageous, who are willing to stand by their convictions and see things through. And thankfully, in a strong, diverse, pluralistic society like ours, there are a lot of those kind of people. It's not easy, but there are a lot of them. And it is really encouraging to know folks like the Little Sisters of the Poor and the Sisters of St. Mary and the Carmelite nuns who really do are sincere and they're serious about their faith and they're not going to back down.
I just heard about a young woman, a little girl out, I think she's in Washington State, and I'm not sure if you're handling this case or not, but she's suing because she just wanted to start an interdenominational, interreligious prayer group in her school in Washington State a week after the same school board gave permission to a gay pride group, and they said no to the prayer group and yes to the gay pride group, the LGBTQ group. And now this little, I think she's 12 years old, is saying no. And her family is agreeing with her, and they're basically suing. Because this is, you know, you can't even have a prayer group, but everybody else can do what they want. It's getting to the point, Daniel. It's just so overtly anti-faith everywhere.
Well, and that isn't my case, but I do know it. It's my friend Kayla Tony at First Liberty, who is an amazing attorney. And I'm very excited about the good work she's going to do there protecting that young family. You know, it is hard. It's hard, and it requires courage on the part of these kids and the part of their families, and frankly, on the part of folks like Kayla, who are willing to do the hard work. But I tell you what, we're winning. We're winning. We actually, just last year, in September, we won overwhelmingly at the Ninth Circuit on exactly this kind of issue, on the question of whether some kids could start a club that was consistent with their faith, and they faced overwhelming opposition, and they won. Now, it took years. It was very hard. The school tried to wear them down. They put a lot of pressure on them, but they won because they stuck it out and they were courageous. And I won that case. We won other cases that are exactly like that in Iowa, in Michigan, around the country. When people stand up, when they're sincere, when they're respectful, and when they're engaged, overwhelmingly, we see good results. Doesn't mean it's easy, but it does give me a lot of hope.
Me too, and I totally agree with you, and I'm so glad that you're there, because we need attorneys like you to fight those battles for us. And it's just a reminder, though, too, because a lot of these people who are involved in this kind of thing, they're so hypocritical, like with the whole abortion movement and those who claim they're pro-choice. So I'm against killing the unborn, but I don't want to force my opinion, you know, or my beliefs on anyone else. So what are they all doing? To Little Sisters of the Poor, to these nuns, these Anglican nuns, to the Carmelites. That's what they're doing. They're forcing their opinions on everybody else.
It's unfair, it's unreasonable, and it makes no sense. Again, I mean, the state of New York recognizes that real religious people have a real religious objection, and they will accommodate some of them, but only the ones that are serving members of their own faith. I mean, if your religious exemption is so narrow that Mother Teresa, the 12 disciples, and Jesus Christ can't fit inside it, right, then it's too narrow. And that's exactly what New York has done. It doesn't make any sense. And I think at the end of the day, it will fall precisely because it's so unreasonable.
We're talking with attorney Daniel Blomberg, and he is with the Beckett Fund Religious Liberty, not just with them. He's the VP and the lead counsel. So what led you to this kind of law? What was it? How did you get involved in Beckett? I'm just curious.
Well, for me, it was a personal calling. You know, I personally have a sense that God is directing things, and this was something he wanted me to do. And it's honestly been such an honor and a privilege and a pleasure to represent so many different people, so many different faiths, as they're sincerely trying to follow their conscience as best they can. One of my favorite folks that I get to work with is a rabbi who served in the U.S. Army for 38 years, and he was bearded the entire time, and he served in hot spots all around the world. And throughout that time, he faced pressure over and over again to shave his beard because, you know, he didn't look like everybody else. And listen, my family's military. I get it. My brothers, my dad, they were all bald. None of them, they were all shaven. So they didn't fit in. You know, this rabbi didn't fit in, but he did the job, and he did it faithfully, and he did it so well. I mean, in Afghanistan and Iraq and at Ground Zero. I mean, and it's just amazing to show that you can serve your nation and you can serve your God in a faithful, conscientious way. And getting to know folks like that, and to serve with them is, I mean, it's such an honor, such a privilege.
And so we've got this case that we brought you on to talk about in the first place that's going on in New York. There's action today. So how long do you, I know you can't predict how long this will last, but today, what happens after today?
So after today, the court will take the issue under advisement. We'll get a decision sometime in the next several months. You know, the wheels of justice grind slowly, and so it'll be longer. But thankfully, these ministries, I mean, they're in it for the long haul, and they've been in it for a long, long time now. They're not going anywhere. And so once the court rules, they'll either get us a victory, or we'll have to take it to the next step and do what's necessary to protect their rights. And because we're not just protecting their rights. At the end of the day, the issue here isn't primarily about abortion. It's not primarily about Anglicans, about Lutherans, about Catholics, about Baptists. It's about whether the government can unnecessarily force you to do something that your God tells you not to do. And in a country like ours, it's built on the promise, the incredible promise of religious liberty. That should not be so. And so until the Anglicans and Lutherans and Catholics and Baptists are protected in the state of New York, we're not going to stop. And I know they're not either. And so we'll see what the Court of Appeals in New York does. If it doesn't do the right thing, we'll keep working to get to the right place.
God bless you. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your excitement about being where God wants you to be, working for Beckett. So give us a website for Beckett, for the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, if people want more information, Daniel.
BeckettLaw.org, and it's Beckett with one T. We all spell it with two T's, like everybody. So it's BeckettLaw.org. BeckettLaw.org. You'll see all the great cases that are going on right now. There's a ton of them, and I really be encouraged. Be of good cheer, because there's good hope for where this is all going.
Amen. And we're a people of hope. Daniel, thank you so much for your great work. We'll be right back on a Tuesday to let you know what's coming on a Wednesday morning edition of Catholic Connect.
He was a doctor of the church and one of the most famous saints of all time.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Augustine is honored for his immense contributions to theology, but he balanced his genius with humility. He once declared, "It was pride that changed angels into devils. It is humility that makes men as angels." He died in 461.
To find out more, visit EWTN.com and click on Catholicism.
The Encounter Conference, June 26th through the 28th at the New Glass City Center in Toledo, Ohio. 15 powerful speakers.
It is the encounter with the Holy Spirit that makes Jesus come alive and gives us the courage and the wisdom to go forth and to even risk our own lives.
Everyone pretty much says the miracles that Jesus did are real. The miracles that the early church did are real.
As often as the popes are talking about the new evangelization, they're also saying we need to pray for a new Pentecost. We need to return to the upper room. Encounter represents the church returning to the upper room. As we're coming boldly before God and asking Him to renew that Pentecostal fire for the strength, the gifts, and the wisdom to be able to preach Jesus to a lost and broken world so that we can become fully alive in Him, so that the world may come to believe that Jesus is the one whom God sent.
Register today at EncounterConference.org. That's EncounterConference.org.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Almost 56 minutes past the hour on a Tuesday morning, April 16th. Thank you so much for tuning in to the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Tomorrow is a Wednesday. That means we go to the Eternal City of Rome for Joan's Rome and much more. Also an update on the NPR editor and his situation in terms of calling out the network for bias. We'll have the latest. Have a great day.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruczek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.